Western traditions are full of stories of people who discover great philosophers or wise men in the most unexpected places. Luckily, when Zia Hassan stumbled across his, he'd just bought a digital camera. Otherwise, what you're about to hear might not have happened. Hassan is a multimedia artist. He writes songs, blogs, and tells stories. He was also mired in an uninspiring career until the day he met his philosopher and uploaded him to YouTube. He shares his story with Ann Strangehamps.
At the end of college, I started really getting into the idea of working with technology and programming, and that skill set kind of led me to IBM. But what I envisioned it to be and what it ended up being was quite a different story.
Yeah, so a little routinized. I read that you were once accidentally fired from your job there. How do you get accidentally fired?
I had the craziest month of my life. They called me up when I was on vacation. They told me that there had been a reshuffling and I was let go because my skill set was no longer valuable. And I didn't work with the people that had that particular skill set. I was on a very highly visible project, and they laid me off just kind of without doing their homework.
So you sort of got fired by a clerical error?
Exactly. And the way I describe it to people, it's almost like, you know, when you're laid off, it's almost like you've been lifted above the clouds and suddenly you see all these paths and these mountains and you're like, oh, my God, I see everything now so clearly, all these different like roads I could take. And that was about 2 years ago. And that's really where I started thinking there are so many other things to do with my life. There are so many things that I could do to make a difference in the world. And I don't think this is it. And even though I got my job back, that was a really major turning point for me.
Mm-hmm. So you were beginning to cast around for other things that you might do, and you were thinking about teaching, and then you had this encounter, which by now, you know, 2 million people around the world have seen this. 2.4 million people around the world have seen this encounter with a young boy, the boy you call your philosopher. How did you meet him?
I was actually on my way to pick up my fiance, she's now my wife. She was babysitting for her coworker's children. And so I stopped by just to pick her up. And she said, you got to come in here. These kids are awesome. You got to come hang out with them. And I said, hang out with them? Well, I mean, they're kids. You're babysitting for them. She said, no, you have to come in here. So I came in. And there's three of them. One boy was 9 years old, and that's the boy in the video. His brother was 7, and their sister was, I think, 2 at the time. And she said, he's really into science. You should talk to him about science. So I just, as a science geek and you know, just as a YouTube science junkie, really, I said, what do you think about dark matter? And he gave me, I forget exactly the response that he gave me, but it was a brilliant response. And I was on my way like the week after to go to Malaysia and Singapore, and I'd gotten this really nice digital camera. And so I said, can I film you? I mean, I have this new camera. Can I film you? And so he said, sure. So I plugged it in. And I, you know, loaded it up and I started asking him all sorts of questions. So start from the beginning because okay. I'm trying to remember what you were saying. I had asked him, do you think that there's life on other planets?
Basically, the humans are on one space, one environment that's inside another environment. We are on Earth.
What he ended up doing is making a metaphor with the ants on the ground.
The ant doesn't know that there's more than the patio here. He just keeps walking. He doesn't know he's just part of of lots of worlds. And the human race is sort of like that.
I was so awestruck that I kept babbling.
So do you think we're alone in the universe? Are we the only intelligent life?
No, I think there probably are many different kinds of life forms, cells and organisms, and they all might have the same perspective as we do on this, that there might be others, and that maybe they can find them someday, but at the moment, they don't know.
So are you going to be one of the people that tries to help find other planets and other life forms and other planets?
I might try to be. You never know for sure if there really is anything in the search. It's an endless quest without knowing what your quest is.
At that point, it sounds like the two of you, you're really talking together like friends. You're not just asking questions to see what he's going to say. It's no longer an interview. Mm-hmm. It's a real conversation. Was he sparking new thoughts for you?
everything that I asked him was based on something he told me in a previous answer. I had just started with the whole dark matter thing, but everything, you know, he was totally making me think about the fact that, you know, there's another point in the video where I ask,
well, what do you think about the idea of alternate universes?
I think it's realistic at the same time as it is fantasy.
It's an amazing answer, because if you listen to any major physicist talk about alternate universes, they all say the same thing, that it's a very interesting theory, but it's borderline philosophy. And in the unedited version, you can hear me say,
that's exactly what scientists think. They're not sure. They have the math to prove it, but they haven't observed it, so they don't know.
Yeah, it's just very complicated, because you have no proof that there's anything out there. The only proof is yourself.
Right.
And where you are in the universe.
So what's the meaning of our lives here on Earth then?
That's one of the hardest questions there is. I would say what the meaning of your life is what you make it. Nobody can decide what you will do except for you.
I never thought that a kid could understand on a cosmic level that much detail about how life works and have that strong an opinion about it. And it's not even like he had it ready in his head. I mean, you can even hear his pausing before he says what he's going to say. He's thinking about it.
So you think that we do have free will then? We can do whatever we want. It's not predestined or anything.
It may be predestined, but you can change that destiny.
Oh, well, that's tricky. But it's good to know.
I mean, I might be wrong. It might be just scheduled, like some play or something, and you act it not knowing that you're part of it.
Ah.
But all the same, maybe you just know it, and that's what destiny is. Destiny is a guess.
The film goes on, and you wound up videotaping a bit of a conversation with his younger brother, who was 7.
Yeah, my father-in-law says that he's the sleeper of the video.
Ah, okay, all right.
Tell
me a little bit about your what you've got there.
Well, this video is a wiffle ball bat.
Okay.
Training up for the season.
Okay.
Coming up in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Again, you know, I ask these kids what they're interested in. I'm not going to ask him about the universe. He might not have thought about it as much as his brother. And I said, tell me about sports.
I think the competition part isn't that necessary, but the reason that we play sports is very necessary for the entertainment and for the suspense, because we do not have that kind of suspense in our lives.
That response really took me, because I've always kind of had that thought in my head. I've never articulated it the way he did, though.
Interesting. Very interesting.
So tell me about the whole process and the decision of posting the conversation online. Why did you decide to do that?
So his parents were out at the time, and I don't think I'd ever met them. And so I just kind of played it cool, kept it on my computer. People would come over, and I would show them this and say, you got to see these kids are amazing. And one day, their father ended up at our apartment. So I said, hey, can you come up and look at this? Because I really would love to put it on YouTube. And he said, if you want to post it, that's fine. I don't think that's a big deal. And then I cut it all together, put some music behind it, and put it on YouTube. And then it just sat there. It had like 200 views. All of my friends were like, this is totally going to go viral. And then 200 views, that was it, and it sat there for about a year. And then when I decided to leave IBM, I wrote this blog post to my friends and family about why I was leaving and what I was going to do next. And I guess it was a little passionate, and it linked to this video of this kid saying that, you know, one of the reasons why I'm interested in teaching is different perspectives from different children, and this, you know, and I posted the video. And someone who read that post must have taken that video and put it on Reddit, and it was just the right place at the right time, and that night, I couldn't refresh my inbox. I remember his dad came home and said to his wife, this video that Zia's posted is apparently going viral. And they went online. And what happens on YouTube when a video goes viral is that the number of views stops at 300. It just stops there for like a day. So they load it up and they see 300 and they say, that's amazing. I can't believe this many people want to hear our son speak. Next day, it was at 70,000, and then 100,000, and then 500, and so on and so forth. So that was a crazy, crazy week.
It must have been exciting, but also very slightly scary. You are talking about young kids. Was there a part of you that thought, oh my God, what have I done?
Yes, absolutely. mainly it was like, I hope he stays humble. I hope that this doesn't change the way he thinks. And it didn't. And his name was never revealed. And even after this whole thing happened, I went to his house. I was talking to his parents because they were a little kind of like deers in headlights, you know, for the whole viral video thing. But I looked at him for a minute. He looked at me and we had this moment of just like, oh, yeah, we blew up the internet. It was cool. But I told him, I said, you know, you've influenced a million people. Like, you've totally made their day, made them happy, made them rethink their life. Like, how does that make you feel? And he just looked at me and said, well, a million people have influenced me over the course of my life. So it's great to be able to give back. That's what he said.
Wow.
So he is extremely humble. Yeah.
Wow. And so now you're teaching in a classroom. You have a new class of fifth graders. Mm-hmm. What influence or what part of that 9-year-old philosopher has come with you to school, do you think?
I look at these kids now and I think they are capable of thinking in very intricate and very complex ways if we allow them to. And a lot of times school is designed to sort of say, like, you don't know anything yet. We're going to put knowledge into your head. You're an empty vessel. We're going to fill it. And in my opinion, kids do not come to school as empty vessels. They come with an incredible amount of experience, an incredible amount of perspective. And so it's a matter of looking at each child and saying, how can I tap that potential? What are their interests? Is it fantasy? Is it social studies? Is it debating? And then kind of hone in on that and say, how can we apply this to the rest of the curriculum? How can we say, okay, if you're into reading, how can you write in a way that helps you learn about math? And if you're into math, how can you look at math in a way that helps you learn about science?
Sounds like you think we really underestimate the wisdom that children already have inside them.
Hugely. Even today, I was talking to one of my students who's 10, you know, just 1 year older, and he told me about his best friend in the world. And I said, how did you meet him? And he said, you know, I don't know. He said, that's the great thing about friends, is that when you have a really good friend, you don't remember your first conversation with them. It just happened. And I thought that was pretty profound. It made me think about my friends. So I think it's just a matter of asking the right questions.
I want to come back and be in your fifth grade classroom.
You can, anytime.
Zia Hassan is now a resident teacher with the Center for Inspired Teaching in Washington, D.C. He's still blogging and writing songs, too. You can see Zia's conversation with his 9-year-old philosopher on our website, ttbook.org.